Hello, and welcome to the Carolina Connection podcast. I'm Sarah Ellis.
And I'm Gauriya Binanda. And today we're going to be going over the litigation between the Trump administration and the 22 states that on the federal level have filed an injunction against President Trump's executive order against birthright citizenship being overturned.
So birthright citizenship has been around. It's the 14th Amendment. What is he trying to do to overturn it?
So to understand how birthright citizenship is being interacted with today, we have to go back to the history of the 14th Amendment. And so the 14th Amendment, it was ratified in 1868, and that came after the Dred Scott case. Most of us know that the Supreme Court had ruled that no Black person could be a U.S. citizen. But then the 14th Amendment reversed that decision. And that guaranteed that all persons born or naturalized within the United States could be citizens and enjoy the rights that citizens have. And so now we see today in the United States, for example, we have different waves of immigration. People are getting naturalized, pursuing different legal pathways into the United States. And this amendment lays the groundwork for immigrant parents, for example, to come in, get naturalized, have the rights of citizens, and then also, if they have children on U.S. soil, their children will automatically be granted U.S. citizenship, be able to enjoy those rights because of the 14th Amendment. I had the opportunity to speak with UNC law professor Theodore Shaw, and he had a lot to offer regarding the language of the 14th Amendment.
All persons born and naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, somebody who is a soldier, in my example, from another country and is trying to invade the United States is not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. An ambassador from another country is not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. But everyone else, you know, they are citizens of the United States in the state wherein they reside. That's the Constitution as it stands now. If people don't like it, then they have the right to try to change it.
So what we can tell from what we just heard from Professor Shaw, birthright citizenship has just been a very long-standing practice within the United States. And without it, there would be absolutely no rights provided to those born in hospitals today. And I was able to speak with Yesenia Polanco. She's an immigration attorney, has been for 16 years, owner of Polanco Law. They specialize in removal defense and different citizenship inquiries. And she had a lot more to say about the direct impact that could occur if this executive order is upheld.
Right now, even if a child is born in the United States to undocumented parents, they have full rights to any program for U.S. citizens, any health care benefits, any educational benefits. If that were to change, then every child born to at least one undocumented parent would now be stripped away of those rights. So families that already may have had a tremendous financial hardship, right, will experience an even greater hurdle to obtaining health care for their children because their children are now not considered U.S. citizens.
So if birthright citizenship is overturned, you have people that could be stateless or undocumented, and those words are thrown around a lot interchangeably. What's the difference?
So being undocumented in the United States means that a person might have nationality, they might be a citizen of another country, but they lack the legal status of the country that they're currently in. So those that have come from another country into the United States, you know, that's the typical, I guess, scenario that we hear of. If they didn't follow a legal pathway, for example, they don't have the papers, they're considered undocumented. However, with this particular case with birthright citizenship, let's say you do have parents that have given birth on U.S. soil to a child, that new person within the United States does not have any nationality whatsoever because of this overturning of birthright citizenship. And so the more accurate term for these people, in my view, is that they would be considered a stateless person.
So being stateless, not having any kind of country or state, what would that mean for a person to be stateless in the United States?
So before getting into that, I guess like getting into the definition of what statelessness really means is important as well. And that goes back into the 1951 Refugee Convention, 1961 UN Conventions about the reduction of statelessness. And the United Nations basically recognized that the issue of statelessness, for example, is a person that has no documentation, identity, because the country that they've come from, the one that they've been displaced from, let's say if we look at the political turmoil in Myanmar, for example, the people from that country, they are not provided citizenship in that country. And then if they flee and go to a country like Bangladesh, who are taking in those refugees, they don't have the status of Bangladeshi citizenship either. So they are stateless. In this particular case, this is a very unique instance where there's no displacement necessarily occurring, but they're being born within the state, the United States. But because birthright citizenship has been overturned, that means that the United States is not recognizing this person, not giving them the documentation saying, yes, you are a United States citizen. That's not happening. And so as a result, they are stateless. They don't have any national identity legal protections.
I mean, we're talking a lot about legal terminology, legal documentation, representation. But on an emotional level, as a human, what would being stateless mean? And what would being stateless, what would the impact of that be for a person?
So I actually had the opportunity to talk to Stefania Arteaga. She works with the Carolina Migration Network. They're a Charlotte-based advocacy organization. And she talked a lot more about how this particular executive order would have negative emotional impacts on expecting mothers, and this is a form of state violence that just generally contributes to a lot of stress for immigrant communities within the United States.
There was a really great study out of UNC that showed that children born to foreign-born mothers were more likely to result in lower birth rates, which we know is correlated with having less positive health outcomes. And so this is just an extra burden people have to go through. And, you know, people are just scared. They're just scared because at the end of the day, this federal government is volatile.
So this issue is currently in litigation. This is on a federal level. This is going to take quite some time. In the meantime, what's going to happen? What now?
So I would say, obviously, like you said yourself, litigation is ongoing. There's been no definitive decision that's been made. And so this is something that is cause for anxiety for many families. Clearly, we heard from Arteaga just now about that, but nothing is final. And so this isn't necessarily cause for that panic yet, per se. But in speaking to attorneys like Polanco, she has legal advice that she's providing to clients. She recommends that they come to her immigration office and others that are willing to provide aid, legal advice, and help, so that those that are feeling anxious during this time have the opportunity to prepare accordingly.
People were very afraid. I recommended that they go ahead and get their child's birth certificate, right? And everything in line, all the names correct, everything. And passports. Go ahead and get your child's passport. Not only because of this issue, but people were calling about this particular issue and being afraid, based on this issue, what's going to happen to my children. But also the rhetoric that we've been hearing about the president's intention to deport families together, regardless of birthright citizenship, right? Regardless of citizenship, period.
Obviously, there's a lot of uncertainty right now, but one thing to keep in mind is if this executive order stands, regardless, this litigation has raised a lot of questions about what it means to be undocumented, what it means to be potentially stateless within your own country, and it raises questions regarding our constitutional history, but then also how we, as a country within the United States, may be challenging international human rights standards.
Gowrie, thank you so much. We'll continue to report on the situation at Carolina Connection. I'm Sarah Ellis.
And I'm Gowrie Abhinanda.